ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 7, Text 6. Etad yonini bhutani saravarn iti upadharaya Aham Krishnasya Jagata Prabhava Pralayastata Etadyoni Nibhutani Saravani Tyupadharaya Aham Krishnasya Jagata Prabhava Kalayastata. Etadyonini bhutani Saravani tyupadharaya Aham Krishnasya jagata Prabhava pralayas tata Etadyoni nibhutani Sarvani tyupadharaya Aham Krishnasya jagata Prabhava pralayas tata What can be useful if you're not accustomed to chanting this? When ya without the a comes at the end of a word, e changes into ya. If you're not accustomed to that, you can imagine that there sarvanit is one word, and then the next word is upadharaya. You can sarvanit upadharaya that way. You can do it. All created beings have their source in these two natures. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. Everything that exists is a product of matter and spirit. Spirit is the basic field of creation, and matter is created by spirit. Spirit is not created at a certain stage of material development. Rather, this material world is manifested only on the basis of spiritual energy. This material body is developed because spirit is present within matter. A child grows gradually to boyhood and then to manhood because that superior energy, spirit soul, is present. Similarly, the entire cosmic manifestation of the gigantic universe is developed because of the presence of the supersoul, Vishnu. Therefore, spirit and matter, which combine to manifest this gigantic universal form, are originally two energies of the Lord, and consequently the Lord is the original cause of everything. A fragmental part and parcel of the Lord, namely the living entity, may be the cause of a big skyscraper, a big factory, or even a big city, but he cannot be the cause of a big universe. The cause of the big universe is the big soul, or the super soul. And Krishna, the Supreme, is the cause of both the big and small souls. Therefore, he is the original cause of all causes. This is confirmed in the Katha Upanishad, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitanam. recently I spoke on Vedic creationism, that it shouldn't be trivialized. And today I'd like to speak more about what Vedic creationism actually is. Creationism gives the idea it's a theory about creation. And in this verse, Lord Krishna directly presents himself as the cause of the creation. As Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport, the cause of the big universe, well, if it wasn't Srila Prabhupada writing, if it's anyone else, or many, many people in this world, they'd say the cause of the big universe is the Big Bang. But Srila Prabhupada writes here that the cause of the big universe is the big soul, not the Big Bang. Maybe there was a Big Bang, but behind the Big Bang is the big soul, the super soul. And Krishna the Supreme is the cause of both the big and the small souls. So even the big soul, the Mahavishnu, he's also emanating from and non-different from Krishna. And in one sense, everything is non-different from Krishna. So it's a big discussion, big philosophy. Just like Srila Prabhupada writes here at the beginning of the purport here, everything that exists is a product of matter and spirit. Now that might seem to be a very innocuous kind of statement, but it innocuous means not very significant or not controversial like that. But it's actually it's a complete challenge to everything that you're taught in school and that we're supposed to believe. It's a completely different perspective on reality as we know it. We don't know it, therefore we have to learn. The basic field of creation is spirit. Spirit is the basic field of creation. And matter is created by spirit. And then Srila Prabhupada goes on to say that spirit is not created at a certain stage of material development. So you can see in these short statements, Srila Prabhupada is deliberately refuting ideas that constitute the basic worldview of the completely bewildered material civilization, as Srila Prabhupada calls it, one of his descriptions. The idea that life arises due to a combination of matter. This is a very big topic in the discussion of abortion in the United States of America. It's been a highly divisive issue for decades now, that abortion is okay, it's legal in the United States of America, only up to a certain time of the child in the womb. They say the child in the womb gets life at such and such a point. It's not really it's okay to kill the child in the womb. It's not really a child. You can't really call it a child. Until a certain point. And what that point is, then they discuss, is it 3 months, 4 months? But as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, and it's an obvious thing, and probably the anti-abortionist pointed out too, well, the very fact that the embryo is growing means there's life. Life is there. It might not be what you call a child, but it's alive. But for them, killing is okay. Anyway, that's a big discussion. Notably in this verse, Lord Krishna doesn't only speak about creation, but he speaks about destruction. It's a cycle going on. Creation, maintenance, and destruction. So this is Vedic creationism, how does it actually happen? Is described in many shastras in Srimad Bhagavatam. Mostly in Bhagavatam, we have a description of the very broad description of how the universe comes into being, and then more description of how the different species of life, the bodies, are formed, how they come into being. We don't, for instance, find so much or any description of how the different dvipas, Jambadvipa and Plakshadvipa, all these are formed, or the different sweet water ocean, salty water ocean, and liquor ocean, and ghee ocean, and sugarcane. And we don't find a description in the Srimad Bhagavatam of that. But we do find much description of, well, much, it takes up quite a significant part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, of how different, anyway, I'll get through to it. Now, these descriptions, it's just a description, just statements, one after another, of how one thing manifests from another, from different prajapatis, the progenitors, different species of life are formed. So generally we think of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is concerned with philosophy, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, science, Vijnana, the word is there for, means science. It's the English word science is usually the word in Indian languages to translate the English word science is Vijnana, which is an ancient word, which means Vishishta or Vishesha Gyan, special knowledge. But as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, what they call science is not Vishesha. It's not refined or specialized knowledge. It's Bigata Gyan. It means all their knowledge went away. They don't really know anything. So what the scientists, we can say they have Vigyan, but that's Vigata Gyan. In this material world, we're all in ignorance. So especially ignorant, Maya Parita Gyana. They seem to be very knowledgeable, but their actual knowledge is taken away by illusion. So mostly these descriptions, it's not of the creation, it's mostly not in and of itself directly philosophy, or doesn't seem to be pastimes of the Supreme Lord. But they're also, the creation is also pastime of the Supreme Lord. As Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out, Srila Prabhupada quotes here in one of his purports, that he quotes, first of all, Srila Prabhupada writes, "The Lord's pastimes in the internal potency are displayed in his activities in Vrindavan." This is from the chapter in the second canto of Bhagavatam called The Process of Creation. "But his external potential works are directed in his features of Karnarnavashai Vishnu, Garbhodakshai Vishnu, and Kshirodakshai Vishnu." Then Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti offers his good counsel to the interested Vaishnavas when he says that they should not be interested in hearing only about the Lord's activities like Rasalila, but must be keenly interested in his pastimes, in his features of the Purush avatars in connection with the Srishti Tattva, creational functions, following the examples of Maharaj Parikshit, the ideal disciple, and Shukadev Goswami, the ideal spiritual master. So we should be interested in these portions of the Bhagavatam also. Personally, I do find it difficult to grasp what's being stated, maybe because I'm brought up in the worldview of modern science. But exactly what it means, I find it difficult to grasp. But that's understandable. Just like science, unless you're really trained and you go very deeply into it, it's very difficult to understand. Just like everyone knows, E equals mc squared. Energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. I haven't got a clue what it means. I don't understand how you can multiply the speed of light in a mathematical equation. Light itself, you can't multiply. You can take the figure for the speed of light. Anyway, I don't understand it. And I join the rest, or almost all the rest of the population of the world, in not understanding it. And there are so many things that we don't understand. It requires special training. It's technical subjects, and it requires a special training to understand that. And I'm not sure if there's much even parampara of training in that, that anyone can explain these things in a authorized way. Now, this Vedic creationism, it's not exactly like the Christian idea. This Aravinda Neelakantan, he criticized that the Vedic creationists, there's something like the Christian creationists, bunch of nutcases who try to... He didn't say that. He was euphemistic. The Christian creationists, they tried to, from the point of view of orthodox science, they tried to twist, or procrustean, there's a word, you try to force the scientific observations to fit what's written in the Bible. So Vedic creationism is very different to Christian creationism in many ways. One important way is that Christian creationism, it's ex nihilo. There's a Latin term, which means God created everything out of nothing, which sounds a bit like the Big Bang Theory, doesn't it? There was nothing and then it exploded. Very difficult to understand, because nothing is nothing. And how does something come out of it? There must be a point of the explosion, which means there's space, and there must be a time, but if there's nothing, then there's neither space nor time. And you could say it's a vacuum, but even a vacuum can only exist in relationship to a non-vacuum. You can create a vacuum. You probably did it in school in your chemistry or physics class. They create a vacuum in some tube, something like this. So the proponents of Big Bang Theory say it's a singularity, which means it's a way of saying it's a miracle. They don't believe in miracles, but singularity sounds like single. It means a unique event. Nabhuto nabhavishyati. We're never before and never again. But we need it to explain our theory. Otherwise we don't have a theory. So the Vedic creationism is quite different, in as much as it's not exactly creation out of nothing. The material energy always exists. Sometimes it's dormant. And then it comes into being. It comes by the glance of Mahavishnu, by the desire of the Supreme Lord. When the matter is dormant within him, then he reactivates it and brings it to life. Or not exactly brings it to life, because the jivas, jiva bhutang mahabaho yaye dam dharyate jagat, is in the verse just prior to this Gita verse that we read. The jivas, they, jiva means living, they give life to the universe. by their desire, the Supreme Lord gives them an arena to work, the material world. So he provides the facility and gives everyone their deserved position. But also, Vishnu is the substratum of everything. But at the same time, he's not a hands-on creator of species. He gets the whole thing in order, sa'aikshata, by his glance. Then he leaves a lot of the work to Brahma, who is a sub-creator. So there's a saying from the English Bible, God created heaven and earth and everything else. Well, from the Vedic perspective, it's true, but not. It needs more qualification, because Vishnu is the ultimate and indirect cause of everything, but he's not the. He doesn't personally do everything. Just like you could say that the Tata, the big Tata, sits in Bombay. And please turn your phone off. There's Tata Naga Jamshedpur in, where is it? Is it in Bihar or Jharkhand? It's in Jharkhand. All the industry and everything went to Jharkhand. So many things are created in that factory, but he doesn't personally create them. In one sense, he creates them, but he doesn't personally do it. So that's a crude example to understand something about the how Lord Vishnu is behind everything, but he's not personally creating everything. Now, in the second canto of Bhagavatam, there's the description of the creation, and also in the third canto, I'll read somewhat from the third canto. Not actually. Much research, much can be done into studying these verses, what is their meaning, but I'll just go through it quickly. Now, the most common word for creation is a well-known word, shushti. That's in Tamil, is it? Yeah. But in the Bhagavatam, we find the word sarga is used. Atra sarga, in the description of the 10 subjects of Bhagavatam. Atra means here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, sarga. The first topic is creation, then visarga, which means the subsequent creation. So here in the third canto, chapter 10, text 14, describes sargo navividhas tasya prakrito vikritas tu yaha, that the sarga, the creation, there are 9 different kinds. There's the prakrita, material, and vikrita, that is explained in the verses coming up from that. What this means. Then kala dravya gunayar asya trividha prati sankramaha. So you can already understand that it's quite complex just from one verse which introduces this subject. I should read the verse prior to this. It's also very important. Yatedanim tatagre chapaschadapyeta didrisham. This cosmic manifestation is as it is now. It was the same in the past and it will continue in the same way in the future. So it's not a singularity. It's not just one time that it happens, but it's going on again and again. Buddha Buddha Pralayate. Again and again it's created or comes into being, and again it is destroyed. So these words here, kala, time, dravya, substances, matter, it's given here, gunai, qualities, the three modes of material nature. So this is the introduction to this topic. And adyastu mahata sargo guna vaishamyam atmanaha. So in the beginning there's mahat, mahat tattva, when everything is homogeneous. That's sometimes called pradhan, although sometimes mahat tattva and pradhan, they're described separately. Then what comes next? So that's the first creation, that the mahat tattva becomes manifest. That means all of matter in a homogeneous state. There's no differentiation. It's been dormant, and then the second phase, remember there are nine phases, ahamaha, the concept of I-ness, individual identity, from which dravya jnana kriyodayaha, knowledge of how to manipulate this matter, that comes into being. So the individual living being in the material world wants to manipulate matter for his sense gratification. So in a dormant stage, that is... and again, by creation, we have to understand that everything's brought, it's manifested. It's not created. In the English word create gives the sense that there was nothing there previously and then you made it. That it's something absolutely new. But it's not. This we have to use the English words because the concepts are so different that there aren't English words for so many things which are described in the Shastras. So the third stage of creation is Bhuta Sarga Stritiyas Tu Tan Matro Dravya Shaktiman. Again, these verses can be analyzed, the Sanskrit words, and exactly what they mean in this context. But basically this means that sense perception, the third stage, is that of sense perception in the Bhuta Sarga. This is the Sarga, the creation of matter. Then the Tanmatra, which means the sensual perception, the sense of touching, tasting, smelling, hearing, feeling. These come into being along with the elements, because along with the matter that is to be perceived, because you can't see unless there's something to see. You can't hear unless there's sound to hear. So it's a very, very different conception of creation to that of, if we say science, they don't exactly believe in creation, but we could say it's coming into being in that sense. It's a very different idea altogether. Very Chaturtha Indriya Sargo Yastu Jnana Kriyatmakaha. The fourth stage is again refers to the indriyas, to the senses. Here, there are two kinds of senses. Again, the English word sense, it doesn't cover the Sanskrit term indriya, because what are called the senses, sense of touch, taste, smell, and so on. But also, these are the gyanendriyas, by which there is perception. And there are also the karmendriyas, by which we can do things. So in this sense, the legs are also, they're also indriyas, they're also called senses, because you can do so, you can walk from here to there. With the arms, you can do work. And the center of both of these sets of senses, karmendriyas, working senses, and gyanendriyas, senses of perception, is the mind, which brings them all together into one organized unit. Then, vaikariko. This means the interaction of the mode of goodness. Deva sargaha. This is panchamo yanmayang manaha. Then comes into being the controlling deities of all these senses and of everything else. That comes into being by the interaction of the mode of goodness. Of which the mind is the sum total. Not very easy to understand. Again, we shall require some some experts to unpack all of this stuff and explain it. I'm just saying what it is. Shashtas, the sixth, to tamasas sargo. And then the sixth phase of creation is that of ignorance, yastva buddhi krita prabhoho, by which the Prabhu, here the word Prabhu refers to each individual jiva, he's living in the world, he's supposed to be satyad anandamai. He is, by nature, full of knowledge, eternity and bliss, but he becomes a fool by the influence of the mode of ignorance. So in one sense he has knowledge, he has perception, but his understanding of that is all foolish. Then these six, they're called the Prakrita Sarga. These are all creations of the material energy. So, and then there's the Vaikriti, the secondary creations of Brahma. So, presumably that is equivalent to Visarga. So the six creations, they come about, it's not specifically stated here, but the first six phases come about by the glance of Mahavishnu, by his desire, and then the next three phases of creation come about by Brahma, and then it goes on from Brahma, as we shall hear. So the first six phases, they're the ingredients by which the ingredients are put into place, all the necessary ingredients for which further creation can take place. Just like here, you're building a temple and you have to bring raw stone, not completely raw, but it's hewn into a certain shape, but then it's brought here and it has to be made just right so that it can be part of a temple. You can bring all the stones in Tamil Nadu, but that won't make a temple. It has to be, the stones have to be made in a particular way so that they will stand in place. They'll also be decorated. They have to be made just right for their particular function, and so many other ingredients also. So Lord Vishnu effects just putting everything, okay, here's everything, now Brahma, you do the rest, dog. You'll go back to sleep. He's always sleeping. Bliss. That's his bliss, yoga nidra. So he, the sleeping material energy and the jivas who are sleeping, he brings them, just brings them to a stage where the further creation can continue. Then the next three phases, they're overseen by Brahma, who's with the creative capacity of Rajoguna, the mode of nature which is responsible for action, especially for creation. So he brings into being the next three stages, the immovable living beings, which are the varieties of fauna, trees and plants. They have a very low level of consciousness. Then the next is the manifestation of the animal species, more conscious, active, but they act by what we call instinct. There's no complete explanation of what instinct means. We can understand that means they're driven by desire also, their own desire, which they had in previous lives, but that's all under the supervision of the Supreme Lord as the Super Soul. Animals, they also have desires. You can see the hungry cows, they're always pretty much hungry. So if you bring them some gur, they become enthusiastic. They desire it. They like it. So they have desires also. And the different species of life are there for, on one hand, punishment, on one hand, fulfilling desires also. And then comes the human species. So the modern idea of biological evolution, it goes from simple, the idea that originally there's some simple cells, biological cells, and they combine and gradually it comes up to the human species. So Vedic creationism, that also admits that they're the less developed species and then up to the human species. But there are three distinct parts of Brahma's creation. They appear in sequence. 1, 2, 3, like that. So this is the secondary creation. Of course, this is all taking place within one Brahmanda. One Brahmanda is translated as universe. There are many universes. If we step back from this universe, or we consider beyond this universe, there are so many universes. How they come into existence, Srila Prabhupada described. Now I'm going to be reading from sections of Srila Prabhupada's writings. Srila Prabhupada writes, in a corner of the spiritual skies, Brahma Jyoti is a spiritual cloud sometimes appears. And the covered portion is called the Mahatattva. The Lord then, by his plenary portion as Mahavishnu, lies down within the water of the Mahatattva. So, okay, there's the Brahma Jyoti in the spiritual world. Oh, I should have given you a printout of this. I didn't. Anyway. A cloud appears, and then Mahavishnu lies down within the water of that Mahatattva. And while Mahavishnu sleeps within the water, innumerable universes are generated along with his breathing. These universes are floating and they're scattered all over the water. They stay only during the breathing period of Mahavishnu. Yanishvisita kala matava lambya. Where does that verse go? Jivanti loma vilaja jagadandanatha. Vishnur mahansa yasya kala vishesha. Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I didn't say the first line properly. I left out one word. But anyway, the idea is that Lord Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Karana Dakashai Vishnu, is lying down, and the universes, they emanate from the pores of his bodily hairs as he breathes out. And when he breathes in, they all come back again. So if you're ever feeling puffed up and thinking I'm very important, just think that this is one life in millions of lives, and it's all going on within one breath of Mahavishnu. Then, reading from another purport in the second canto, this material manifestation is necessary to give a chance to the conditioned souls who are unwilling to associate with the Lord in the relationship of loving transcendental service. Instead, they want to enjoy themselves as imitation gods. The living entities are constitutionally eternal servitors of the Lord, but some of them, because of misusing their independence, do not wish to serve. Therefore, they are allowed to enjoy the material nature, which is called Maya or illusion. Their desire to enjoy the material world is called Maya. Because the living beings under the clutches of Maya are not factually enjoyers, although they think that they are. So this is illusion, thinking that we are enjoyers. Then, in each and every universal globe, the same Mahavishnu enters again as Garbhodakashayi Vishnu and lies there on the serpent-like Shesha incarnation. From his navel sprouts a lotus stem, and on the lotus, Brahma, the Lord of the universe, is born. Brahma is the father of all living beings and the master of all the demigod engineers engaged in the perfect design and working of the universal order. So when we say that Brahma is the engineer, he's one of them. There are other engineers also. Of course, Vishvakarma is also very well known as an engineer of the universe. Again, it's an English word. It doesn't exactly fit the Shastric description. Within the stem of the lotus, there are 14 divisions of planetary systems, and the earthly planets are situated in the middle. Upwards, there are other better planetary systems, and downwards from the earthly planetary system, there are 7 lower systems. Then elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada writes, this gigantic manifestation of the phenomenal material world as a whole is the personal body of the absolute truth. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina. Krishna says this whole cosmic manifestation, it is a manifestation of himself. It is his, he says, avyakta murti. It is the form of which comes from non-manifestation. So from non-manifestation comes the universe under the supervision of Krishna. And wherein the universal resultant past, present, and future of material time is experienced. So this is another element to consider, time, the time factor. Very difficult to understand how is it? In one sense, it's very easy to understand. Yeah, time is 1 second, and then another second, and then a minute, and then an hour. These divisions are there. An hour, and then a day, and then a month, and then a year. And in one sense, it's easy to understand. But if we start to think about what is the nature of time and how everything happens within time, then it becomes very complex. Whether you think about it philosophically or scientifically, Albert Einstein surmised that time and space are the same. They're different. We perceive them as being different, but they're the same. And he did some mathematics to prove it. difficult to understand. But they are separate entities in the Vedic understanding. Separate in the sense, ultimately everything is non-different from Krishna and different from Him also. Elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada writes about the disc of Lord Vishnu, Sudarshan Chakra, Hari Chakra. He writes that this chakra is the wheel of time, Sudarshan Chakra. Gets more mysterious, huh? Okay, then Brahma's creation. Brahma is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He thought of generating living entities and begot 10 sons for the extensions of the generations. Now, here it gets what would be called, from the modern scientific point of view, very unscientific. Of course, we don't accept their science. But Daksha was born from one of Brahma's thumbs. Thumbalina. There's something. I say, you all laughed. Do you know what that is? It's Hans Christian Andersen's story, is it? Some fairy story. I remember the word. But what does it mean? Someone was born from a thumb? Or she's born the size, some girl in some fairy story, born the size of a thumb. Okay. Marichi was born from his mind. Kardama was manifested from the shadow of Brahma. Yeah. Okay. There's nothing to discuss. We can't imagine it. We just accept it. That's all. When Brahma saw that in spite of the presence of sages of great potency, there was no sufficient increase in population, he seriously began to consider how the population could be increased. Two other forms were then generated from his body. They are still celebrated as the body of Brahma. The one who had the male form became known as the Manu, named Swayambhuva, and the woman became known as Shatarupa, the queen of the great soul, Manu. Manu begot in Shatarupa 5 children, 2 sons and 3 daughters. The 3 daughters, the first one was Akuti, who was given to the sage Ruchi, then Devahuti was given to Kardama, and the youngest, Prasuti, was given to Daksha, and from them all the world filled with human population. Human population is very important because it offers the conditioned soul sufficient intelligence to perceive the absolute truth. Daksha was born as the son of Lord Brahma, but he insulted Lord Shiva, and in another birth he became, then it's a whole story how he again had to take birth as the son of the Prachetas. Then in that birth he begot 60 daughters in the womb of his wife Asigni, and then these daughters, they became the wives of various great sages and prajapatis and exalted personalities, and it's because of them, because of this union, this is where the universe gets populated with not only humans, but demigods, demons, animals, birds, snakes, insects, and so on. Kardama Muni's daughter, Kala, was married to Marichi, and she gave birth to Kashyap, and Kashyap had 17 daughters. He received 17 daughters from Daksha. Out of the 60 daughters, 17 became the wives of Kashyapa, and then they became the mothers of the population of most of the universe, and not just humans. That will be described just a little on. And the Bhagavatam states the names of these daughters and says that their names are very auspicious to hear, so let's hear them. Aditi, Diti, Danu, Kashta, Arishta, Surasa, Ila, Muni, Krodavasha, Tamra, Surabhi, Sarama, Timi, Vinata, Kadru, Patangi, and Yamini. Please chant Hare Krishna. I'll take a break for 5 minutes. Yeah, take that off. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, wives of Kashyap and the offspring from these various wives. Aditi, as is well known, is the mother of the demigods. Diti is the mother of the daityas, who are sometimes called demons, and Danu is the mother of the Danavas, who are another race of demons. Vinata had two sons, Garuda, is well known as the carrier of Vishnu, and Anuru, who is better known as Aruna, the chariot driver of the sun god. Then from the wife known as Muni, the Apsaras took birth, the heavenly dancers, courtesans, that's the word, courtesan. Write it down, it just came in my mind now, which means sophisticated prostitute. Then from Surasa, the wife named Surasa, were born the Rakshasas. And from Arishta, the wife called Arishta, were born the Gandharvas. And from Timi came all the aquatics. You've heard of the Timingala. Timi means a whale, but in Timingala means a whale that's so big it eats other whales. And Timi is the name of the mother of all the fish and various related species. Ila gave birth to all the creepers and trees. Yamini gave birth to locusts. It's translated here as locust. One that refers to one classification or one group of that kind of insect. Another kind, Krodavasha, was the mother of the mosquitoes. From the womb of Sarama came animals like tigers and lions. There's one word, Sarameya, which means dog. So presumably the dogs came in that. Then from the womb of Surabhi came the cow, the buffalo, and other animals with cloven hooves. It seems to be in ancient culture a big thing, whether animals have cloven hooves or not. You know what that means, cloven hoof? It means a split in the middle. In Manu and in the Old Testament, we find certain animals, according to their hooves, they can be killed and eaten or not. Animals whose hooves are not split, such as the horse, were born from the womb of Kashta. And Patangi gave birth to many kinds of birds. And from the womb of Tamra, the eagles, vultures, and other large birds of prey took birth. Kadru gave birth to different varieties of serpents. And Krodavasha, who is mentioned as giving birth to the mosquitoes, she also gave birth to another variety of serpents, snakes, and reptiles. And then there's a description of the time that's also to be considered. When there's creation, there's also to be considered destruction. So again, reading from some of Srila Prabhupada's purports, at the end of the millennium, this here, the millennium, this word means, in this sense, it means the end of the day of Brahma. Then the Supreme Lord Narayana, Mahavishnu, lies down within the water of devastation. He lay down in the water of creation, now he's lying down in the water of devastation. Then Brahma begins to enter into him, along with all the elements that he had manifested. They all start to again merge into him. The merging of the living beings into the body of Mahavishnu takes place at the end of Brahma's 100 years. But Srila Prabhupada clarifies, that does not mean that the individual living being loses his identity. It's the identity is there, and as soon as there is another creation by the supreme will of the Lord, all the sleeping, inactive living beings are again let loose to begin their activities in the continuation of different past, different spheres of life. So that all the living beings merge into the body of Mahavishnu doesn't mean that they lose their individuality. It becomes dormant for some time, just like sleeping, our individual, personal will to work and do various things, that becomes dormant, maybe dormant for 6 hours, or maybe dormant for the time in which Mahavishnu's breath is held in. But it doesn't mean that we lose our individuality. Then the calculation of Brahma's life, one day is equal to 1,000 ages of 4 millenniums, and that's approximately 43 lakhs of years. And the same is the period of his night, Sahasra Yoga Pariyantam Ahayad Brahmano Viduhu. The 1,000 ages taken together is one day of Brahma, and his night is said to be the same. One Brahma lives for 100 such years, and then he dies. And the cycle is there. Satya, Treta, Dwarpa, Kali Yoga. And that goes on. And then it goes on, and then it comes to an end with the destruction. At the end of Brahma's day, under the insignificant portion of the mode of darkness, the powerful manifestation of the universe merges in the darkness of night by the influence of eternal time. The innumerable living entities remain emerged in that dissolution, and everything is silent. When the night of Brahma ensues, all the three worlds are out of sight, and the sun and the moon are without glare, and fire emanates from the mouth of Sankarshan. All the seas overflow, and hurricane winds blow very violently. Thus the waves of the seas become ferocious, and in no time at all, the three worlds are full of water. Presently, we are just in the beginning of the second half of Brahma's life, Dutiya Parardha. Whenever there's any function, the priest will say where we are in Jambadweep, and where we are in time, where we are in space, and where we are in time. So these, this whole of Brahma's life is less than 1 second for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unchanging and unlimited and is the cause of all causes of the universe. All the universes in seed are emanating from the breathing of Mahavishnu, who is but a partial expansion of the Lord, and all the universe is presided over by the Brahmas vanish when the Mahavishnu withdraws his great breath. In this way, the material worlds are being created and vanished by the supreme will of the Lord. So Vedic creationism also means Vedic destructionism. We know what's going to happen. So, this description is there of how everything comes in seed form, then it expands. And you might try to map that onto Big Bang Theory. And I came across something, someone was trying to see, well, you see, it's just like Big Bang, but it's not. There may be some similarities, but it's not Big Bang Theory. And even if you say Big Bang, the whole description of how the... first thing, it's not creation, ex nihilo, out of nothing. And how the different species come into being, it's not by biological evolution. My big question is this idea of biological evolution. You say the struggle for the survival of the fittest, but how do, if you say everything's come into being from a combination of chemicals, how does it ever come that chemicals, they have this urge to survive and to procreate? And one group of chemicals in one body feels for another some attraction. And different bunches of chemicals come together, maybe two men come together and beat another man to death. Where does that come from? Where does desire come from? Why should a bunch of chemicals desire to live, to eat, to survive? Where does sorrow, pain, and all these things come from? We're working on it. The hard question. The hard question of, it's not just a question of consciousness, but it's a question of desire and volition. Where does it all come about? So trying to map everything onto modern scientific theories, it's not a good idea at all, because the scientific theories change, and then you see, it fits with science, and all of a sudden you're left standing there and all the scientists left. You're trying to speak to all the scientists, it fits with Big Bang theory. Yeah, but okay, it's a nice, and you gave a nice speech about how it fits with Big Bang, but we already gave that up 50 years ago. By the time you research it and put it all together, anyway, their theories are always going to change. That we know for sure. And Big Bang theory seems to be on the way out. It came publicly that one of Stephen Hawking's, the great proponent of Big Bang theory, he said, actually, he got it all wrong. And scientists, it's a big bounce theory. It expands and then it collapses and expands and collapses. That's closer to the Vedic description, but I wouldn't try to map one onto the other. It's not going to work. The whole idea of trying to understand what's going on in the universe by examining it through our imperfect senses with our limited intelligence and our inability to understand anything properly or clearly, it's a losing proposition from the start. So, better just stick to the Vedic description. That's all. We can't prove it, we can't disprove it. You can't prove modern science theories and you can't disprove them. Well, you can say you can prove some of them. If you accept certain axioms to start off with, unprovable axioms, then you can prove that hydrogen and oxygen are the components of what we call water. Okay, but you can't prove or disprove Big Bang theory, Big Bounce theory, solid state theory, whatever different theories there are as to what the hell's going on in the whole universe all around us. So it's a waste of time anyway to try to pursue all these things. Now, it is a fact that, well, I say it's a fact, but I'll try to convince you that it's a fact, that Vedic creationism, as our friend Aravindan Neelakanta calls it, it is more open to attack than even Christian creationism. It's more open to attack and less adjustable to the modern scientific outlook than is Christian creationism. And I suppose Islam must have its own creationism also, because for the very reason that it's very rich and detailed. In the Bible, you just tell God created, God said, let there be light. And then in 6 days, he created everything. And that was it, finished. In two paragraphs of the Bible, that's the whole thing. finished. There's not much to say about it, so there's not much to attack or to analyze. And it's also more adjustable. The Roman Catholic Church, the largest religious denomination in the world, still at this point in time, they have accepted, yes, evolutionary theory or Big Bang theory, science, we accept everything you say. We just say that God put it in order. That's all. And so they say, well, no, we don't need your God. You can say that if you like, but we don't need your God. So they've tried to make a compromise with that. But it's very difficult for us to put the Vedic cosmology and creationism and adjust it to modern scientific theories. I don't think there's ever going to be any point in time when Daksha being emanating from the thumb of Lord Brahma is going to map onto some scientific theory. Although you never know, you find all these various Mayavadis, they're expert in imagining all kinds of symbolism that actually it says this and it means this, and they're expert at this kind. But it's not, I personally don't find it very convincing. So to try to justify all this in terms of modern science, we'd better just forget it right from the beginning. That's all. And just, we accept the Vedic version is correct. We don't accept that we tiny living beings can understand what's going on in this universe by our own efforts. We accept that we are controlled. We're not independent. There is a supreme controller. We don't accept that simply everything, asatyam apratishtam te jagadahura nishvaram. We don't accept what the demoniac people say, that there's no basis to this universe, there's no ultimate truth, there's no God in control. No, we accept there's God, there is supreme controller. And he has given the description in the Vedic scriptures as to how this universe comes into being. We accept, that's all, that there are many things which we never saw in this lifetime, but we accept it's possible. And actually, in previous times, people would have no problem accepting this. It's only because of this very atheistic kind of education that people would even doubt such things. Oh, Daksha was born from the thumb of Lord Brahma. Okay. And they don't have any problem with it. But then you're like, no, it must be. It can only be like this because we're scientists and we said so. We try to extrapolate from what we see on this tiny little planet and then look out a little bit with our telescopes, and we try to extrapolate the nature of the whole universe and the whole history of the universe, and we just presume it has to be according to what we think it should be, and we don't believe stories. And there's also of people being produced from thumbs, and there's also this idea of scientific progress. Previously there were no microphones, now there are microphones. Previously there were no cell phones, now there are cell phones. So it shows we're making progress, which means that in the past what they believed is not true. It's faulty logic. In the past, because we didn't have knowledge of microphones, doesn't nullify the descriptions of how the universe comes into being. It's rejection on a wrong premise. Many Hindus, they, when confronted with this intellectual and cultural paradox that we believe in science and we're Hindus, but what about all these descriptions in the Shruti and Smriti, Puranas, Ramayana, all these things, ten-headed Ravana, and oceans of milk. How is that? Is there preservative in it? Or where are all the cows to give so much milk? Ocean of sugarcane juice. Doesn't sound very scientific. So many Hindus, they just say, anyway, that's not the real thing. The real thing in Hinduism is we're all one. We're all God, they may say. But as I discussed in the previous talk, you can't take part of the Vedic understanding, and even this idea that we're all one without any differentiation from the Absolute Truth, that's also a misunderstanding. You can't take one part and reject the rest. The Sri Aurobindo of Puducherry, actually from Bengal, but he settled down there because it was a French colony and the British wanted to arrest him, so he settled down there. Of course, the British could have gone in, but for diplomatic reasons, they didn't want to go and arrest him in French territory. Political reasons. So he had the idea that we have to constantly update knowledge. It's the same as the materialistic people say. We're constantly updating knowledge and we're finding out and the old ideas are put in the past. So he had the idea, now we have new revelations. And people in the past thought like that and we offer them our respect, but actually we don't accept what they say. But no, Veda means knowledge. It's truth. It wasn't that people in the past, the great rishis, who they were doing their meditation and having spiritual realization, but they still thought that all these descriptions of the universe, they still believed in that because they didn't have scientific knowledge. Now we have all these meat-eating and scientists and atheists, and they all came up with all these advanced ideas. So, therefore, the Vedic descriptions, we don't have to accept that, but we'll accept our own spiritual realizations and understanding. It's a form of atheism, actually, sophisticated atheism. So this idea that we have to update it, Srila Prabhupada was maybe unique in the history of Vedic culture. Definitely he was, in as much as he took on the Western way of thinking. He didn't try to compromise with it. He said, no, we accept the Vedic knowledge. And if your knowledge doesn't fit what we say, if you can try and fit your knowledge to us if you like, but you don't have to. It's a waste of time anyway to do all this scientific research. If it's in Shastra, it must be correct. They couldn't have gone to the moon because the moon is further away than the sun. One of Prabhupada's servants couldn't accept this and he left Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said, well, if I had said it, I could understand why he didn't believe me, but Shastra says it. You see the distinction that Prabhupada made? Because it's not that I'm saying, it's not something that I dreamed up, it's in Shastra. How can you disbelieve Shastra? So attempts to try to cram the Vedic knowledge on to make it adjustable, it's not going to work. And I'm to modern theories, and we should be grateful actually to Aravinda Nilakanta that he brought up this. He was a diatribe against Vedic creationism because, let the matter come out. Let's discuss it. How can you be a quote Hindu, unquote, and not accept the descriptions in Shastra? What is that? Are the shastras meaningful? Or they were meaningful in the past and now we have to listen to Aravindo? What's going on? Let's discuss. Let's bring it out. There's no, quote, Hinduism, unquote. There's no Vedic culture without the Vedic knowledge. You can't take it out. Just as a side note at the end, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in one of his first books, Sri Krishna Sanghita, he presented the Vedic narrations of time, the history given in the Vedic narrations, and he scrunched up everything and made the great long time, times that are described, he made it shorter and tried to make the history of the universe as described in the Bhagavatam fit modern ideas at that time. And he did state that, anyway, this is for the ass-like people who don't have faith in Bhagavatam, but here, you should have faith because it fits your theories. He did like that. But if we look now, because the scientific theories have changed, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said at that time doesn't fit. So he was doing that. He said clearly in his Krishna Sanghita that this is, if you don't believe the Bhagavatam, look, even the history fits with a little adjustment. But you see how it doesn't fit at all now. Because what was considered at the time, yes, this is science, we have to believe it because of science. Now it's all completely outdated. So yeah, we need to do. We means capable devotees need to do a lot of research. As Sadaputa Prabhu stated that he started to do a lot of research with Dhruta Karma Prabhu to see if the descriptions within Shastra of civilized, intelligent human life being present on this planet, can it be justified according to modern scientific theories? Not that can we adjust our theories to modern science, but if modern science, is there anything there which shows how life, intelligent, civilized human life has been on this planet for literally millions of years, which is absolutely, in the modern orthodox way of thinking, that's absolutely passé. No, impossible. But he thought, okay, let's try and see if there is anything. And he and Dhruta Karma Prabhu became astonished to find when they started digging, archaeologists dig, when they were researching, that there's a huge body of evidence which indicates this. But it's all been covered up. If you dig up the wrong kind of bones, put them down again and don't say anything about it. Otherwise your theory will kill your career. It actually happened to one archaeologist. She found some bones which were too old, and that was the end of her distinguished career. Because she said, look, I found them. They're, no, you didn't. Then she was thrown out of all the universities. The knowledge filter. So Sadaputa Prabhu wrote in one important letter that we didn't think there would be such things. But there's actually a huge body. And that knowledge became compressed into that huge book, Forbidden Archaeology. Forbidden because the scientists don't want to hear it. Then he said that there are so many other fields of Vedic knowledge which we can do research into, but we need experts in various fields. To, in other words, having done that project, he was confident that by scientific research, we can bring out so many other points which are in the Vedic scriptures, but it requires a lot of research by qualified devotees. So, anyone here with a PhD in paleontology? Well, that's already been done, but there are all kinds of things. Neurology, neuroscience is big at the present time, is practically retiring. Psychology. So their theory is that, well, by giving various stimuli to the brain, either electric or magnetic or chemical stimuli, to certain parts of the brain, you can induce various kinds of emotions and sensations, including mystical experiences. So it just goes to show that consciousness is a product of the brain, nothing else. Sounds convincing, doesn't it? Interestingly, one of the most prominent authorities in the world on neuroscience at the present time is a Dr. Ramachandran from somewhere in Tamil Nadu, who's now in a university in San Diego in California. And he said that, no, it doesn't show that religious ecstasy can be simulated by stimulating different parts of the brain. Doesn't mean that there's no such thing as religious ecstasy. Rather, it indicates that there is such a thing as religious ecstasy. The example that Sadaputta Prabhu always gave is that the brain is like hardware. It's simply a mechanical device through which consciousness works in this world. But consciousness is not dependent on the hardware. So something like electricity in a computer. There's a big field of research and preaching. I just came across, was it this morning or last night, that Srila Prabhupada said something to the effect that by asserting something, people believe it's true. If you just go on asserting it, then people believe it's true. And he was talking about how in the modern age they think that women are as intelligent as men. And Prabhupada said, yeah, you go on asserting it and then people will believe it. And that's in Bhagavatam also, that what is that? Darshje Satyatvam. I can't remember exactly, but the purport is that in Kali Yuga, if you're arrogant enough and audacious enough to go on saying something, even though it's not true, people will believe it and they'll accept it as true. In Bangladesh, I read a book in English about the history of Bangladesh, and it said how the Bangladeshi, what are they called? Mukti Jodha Bahini, the independence fighters, they bravely threw out all the Pakistan, the Punjabis, and then Zia Rahman, he hoisted the Bangladeshi flag in Chittagong. Can't say the word. Anyway, it's BS. It's rubbish. What was happening, there were so many East Pakistanis coming into India, as a major crisis. So at some point, the Indira Gandhi sent in the Indian army and they finished off the Pakistanis. It has nothing to do with the Bengalis. I mean, they may have had something to do with it. Anyway, the point is that they've rewritten history. And there's just one instance of thousands and millions. how history... Winston Churchill said that history will treat me kindly because I'm going to write it. So he wrote the history and made himself to be a great hero. Although, as Prabhupada said, he was the greatest demon of the Second World War. And even before he... Anyway, the point is that if you speak a lie enough, people believe it. But the truth is something different. So... Actually, if we follow the scientific method, then we should be able to show to some extent, we're not ever going to be able to show how from Brahma's thumb Daksha comes out, because it already happened and that was up in Brahma Loka, and we don't see such things here. But it can be done, should be done. We don't need it. We should just accept Shastra. But for the non-devotees, skeptics, they're never going to believe it either. But we have to, for people who are not hardened demons, who are not on the platform of asatyam apratishtam te jagadahuraniswaram, who are not on the platform of insisting that there's no transcendental basis to this universe, there's no God in control, then a lot can be done. And it would be a lot can be done to show that the Vedic statements, they coalesce with reality as we can perceive it, more than might be imagined at the present time. So, Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Many, many. It could be a huge discussion. Should be a huge discussion. Anything? Anyone want to say? From the Shastric point of view, Gokul Chandra Prabhu here is one of the biggest authorities in ISKCON because he took time out to study it. So if you have any questions, you can ask him. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.